The Guardian.
"20 years ago, I left Somalia on foot, walking for days to flee violence and hunger. Now I'm here to talk to families escaping this new crisis. Mukhtar Rabi, the village elder, showed me where he used to water hundreds of cattle.
People from this village have died from starvation. The situation is unbearable.
Everywhere I look, the drought has destroyed life. Thousands of animals have starved to death. Those who are able to go in search of food do."
1 year ago, a famine was declared across large parts of Somalia and the Horn of Africa. Although the aid response did eventually get underway and help was brought to needy Somalis, aid agencies admit that between 50,000 and 100,000 people died from hunger and related causes. Welcome to the Guardian Global Development Podcast. I'm Felicity Lawrence, and this month we're looking at the food crisis which is now gripping the Sahel region of West Africa. And we'll be asking, has the aid response to this crisis been any more effective than the response to the Somali crisis? We'll be looking at the situation across the Sahelian countries of Niger, Mali, Chad, Burkina Faso, Senegal and Mauritania, and asking what are the reasons for food insecurity, which has lasted for 7 years, and what can the solutions be? I'm joined in the studio by Mariana Morella Lobo from the NGO Action Against Hunger, and on the line by Denise Brown, the country director for the World Food Programme in Niger, and Slanwa Gaston, who works for Tear Fund, also in Niger. So what's happening in the region right now? Let's hear some voices from the Sahel. Here's Binta Adam from Niger.
"There are three reasons why we're hungry. The rains meant the harvest was poor, and we have no animals left to sell. And my husband is no longer here to support us. It's our custom to share things, but now a lack of food means no one can help. I'm doing my best to feed the children by mixing wild leaves with cassava, but that's all we have. This year is the worst."
Let's go first to Gaston from Tear Fund in Niger. Gaston, we hear there that Binta has been eating wild leaves. Is that actually happening to lots of people where you are?
The food security in Niger has been too bad to the extent that many households have seen their mothers, wives going to the bush in search of dry food, of dry leaves that they bring back home and try to survive on that. For many families, the only thing they could eat in a day were are those dry leaves that are brought back from the bush by women who spend their whole day in search of those dry leaves. Communities visited have shown that clearly, as households visited have shown dry leaves gathered by women and how people tried to survive on that for months in Niger. This is real and is happening in many communities.
Mariana Morello Lobo from Action Against Hunger in the studio. You work in several Sahelian countries, Niger, Chad and Mali. Can you tell me what the nutritional situation in those countries is right now?
Sure. We have a situation of chronic and structural vulnerability, first of all. And we currently find that almost 19 million people are in very vulnerable situation. And in particular, we have about 3 million children at risk of acute malnutrition, being that over 1 million children are severely acute malnourished. So this is a significant humanitarian situation and crisis.
Can you tell me just what that means in day-to-day terms for children and mothers trying to survive?
For a child being undernourished, and particularly acute undernourished, it means that he or she is not getting the adequate nutrients. it also means that this doesn't happen overnight. It means that it is over a period of time that your body becomes more weakened. And when it comes to a very acute condition, which we call of severe acute malnutrition, it basically means that you're at the risk of dying from hunger.
Denise, we heard Mariana talking there about the need for action from the wider community. WFP is there on the spot. What are you able to do now to help people affected by these food shortages?
The important point is that the aid community with the government has actually been intervening since November. So, you know, at least 6 to 7 months ago, as one of the colleagues mentioned, we all saw this coming and we all began to scale up months ago to prevent this becoming a humanitarian catastrophe, though we are in a very, very critical situation. We are working very closely with the government, with our NGO partners, with the donors to confront what is the toughest time of the year, the lean season or the hunger season. But really focusing on keeping people in their communities, in their villages, as we come up to the planting and harvesting season, it's extremely important that people stay in their homes. So the food and cash transfers are in part to ensure that the situation is stabilized and populations are not moving, looking for assistance. The second part of that is combining those food and cash transfers with the nutrition response. We do what's called blanket feeding. That is a massive nutrition stabilization program for children between 6 and 23 months and lactating women. Malnourished or not, all of the children in villages which are at risk for deteriorating, either food insecurity or nutrition, they get these special nutrition products.
What can you do, though, about the fact these food shortages keep happening? How can you just move from a crisis response to building greater resilience?
I think there's a very interesting dynamic in Niger right now. There is a new government. There is a willingness and a transparency on the part of this government to acknowledge the problem, which was not there in the past, and build on solutions. But we can't build solutions until the problem was acknowledged, which finally it has been. Just give an example. The 2011 irrigated crops, that's tomatoes, potatoes, onions, was the largest it's ever been in Niger, the equivalent of 400,000 tons of cereals. So it shows what the country can do outside of the regular rain-fed harvest.
Let's move on now to explore how effective the aid response has been. As I said before, the response to last year's crisis in Somalia was heavily criticised. And this year, aid agencies in the Sahel, and in fact the Niger government, began to raise the alarm early, as we've just heard from WFP, almost before the end of the 2011 rainy season, some 6 months before the worst of the hunger crisis was to hit. So I'm wondering if that's actually made a significant difference. Gaston, in Niger, how effective do you think the aid response has been to this crisis? Is it better than in previous years?
Well, it's difficult to really say there has been some improvement, but not very significant. We seem to see almost same mistakes being repeated, I should say, because the response comes, but often it comes late. At the moment, government had produced a report showing that there has been some significant response and more commitment made also from international community, which is showing some improvement, except that, like we hear from communities, people wish this is done a bit earlier, and that will be more effective in terms of addressing the issue. But compared to previous years, yes, we can see more commitment from this government.
Denise, can I just bring you back in there? Because I'm wondering, obviously there are advantages to sounding the alarm early, but do you worry that donors may be getting tired of hearing about it by now? This is the worst time, but is there a sort of fatigue setting in because it was raised so early?
You know, I've heard this comment before, but I believe that there hasn't been a fatigue set in. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that, again, I really want to insist on the excellent collaboration we have in Niger between the government, the UN, the NGO partners, and the bilaterals, the donor community. We have all of us provided consistent messages over time saying the same things. So it's really been an example of a community working together. The government and the UN have issued joint press releases. The UN and the NGOs have issued joint press releases. We have worked together. The other is that there is a good news story here somewhere. We are not just focusing on doom and gloom. Yes, there is a chronic problem with malnutrition. Yes, we know that there are children who are already malnourished. But there is a very, very good treatment system in place in Niger between the government, UNICEF, the World Food Programme, and NGO partners like ACF who work treating malnutrition. Also the blanket feeding, again, it's a preventative measure. So we also need to focus on the good news stories, on the things that work. And what we see is that the donors actually appreciate us, you know, holding up our hand and saying, yes, thanks to early interventions, we are able to at least stabilize the situation.
Mariana, so do you think there's good news? Do you think the response has been better, Somalian? Can you see that lives have been saved in the Sahel?
Well, I think certainly if we compare with last year and also the previous years with the Sahel crisis, it does appear that there is more mobilization or at least more political commitment to address the current crisis. However, I think we are still facing the duality that we've had over the last decade, to say the least, which is the division between the emergency response and what is needed to do to address the more structural causes or the underlying causes of hunger and malnutrition. And this is where I think that the change needs to happen, and it needs to happen now. What I'm basically getting at is that, well, we are still operating under, at least for Action Against Hunger, we are still operating with a budget that is substantially inferior to the needs that are required to respond to this crisis right now.
Before we move on to some of those big structural issues and what the solutions might be, we've heard quite a bit from Niger. Could you just, from your very direct experience as an agency, one of the few aid agencies working on the ground still in Mali, talk a little more about what's happening there? The entire north has fallen to rebel Islamist groups, and WFP is not sending expats up there anymore. Some 1.6 million people thought to be hungry there. What is Action Against Hunger finding on the ground?
We are still present in Mali. We do see a critical increase of the situation in Mali, and basically this is going to require, ideally, a lot more activities than we would originally envision. And we have nutritional activities in Gao, and I've just had reports from the field that that basically there is an increase to the admission centers, to our nutrition admission centers. That's quite important.
Are you seeing people eating leaves, reduced to leaves there too, as they are in Niger?
Well, people eating leaves, it's unfortunately it's a very critical or a very dangerous, what we call a dangerous coping mechanism that happens throughout different areas in the region when the crisis is very, very, very acute. And it is critical because it might make you last throughout some days, but unfortunately they do not enable you to be stronger to cope with that shock or future shocks.
Well, let's move on to look at some of the solutions. This is a crisis which has been portrayed in some international media as being caused by drought and lack of production. So is the solution increased agricultural production, more food? Let's hear from Professor Adam Tudu at the University of Niamey about an initiative called Nigerians Feed Nigerians, a government effort to increase food production.
The first good initiative to trois vise à promouvoir ces potentialités-là, c'est-à-dire la possibilité.
The 3Ns initiative tries to promote the potential of Niger's own agriculture. For example, It's about increasing irrigation, developing production systems for agriculture in the floodplains of our rivers, or reinforcing farmers' capacity for production. There are several programs working at once. So I believe if sufficient resources are put into this initiative, the cycle of crisis that we live through every year here can be broken.
Denise Brown from WFP. We hear that the Niger government believes in small-scale initiatives to help farmers increase their production, and organisations such as the Alliance for Green Revolution in Africa are calling for almost the opposite, a massive upscaling and mechanisation of farming. How important is increased production in the eyes of WFP, and which route do you think is more effective?
Well, I think increased production is an immediate priority. We're not going to be able to do very much if people are not able to feed themselves. And we're talking about, for the moment, the way the country is structured. As I said earlier, many, many thousands of small rural villages where people depend on the rain-fed agriculture. So I think in the immediate term, WFP also firmly believes in the initiatives of the three N's, Nigerien, Nourrice, Nigerien, and stimulating local production immediately. And we're actually working with the three N's on incorporating lessons learned from the Brazilian program of Zero Famine, which links the school feeding programs to community production. And we hope that during the course of 2012-2013, we'll be able to implement this program with the three N's and the Ministry of Agriculture and the Ministry of Education. But that's as an immediate priority. The country has an underlying problem, which is its population growth rate, which we haven't touched on yet. And basically by 2040, the population is expected to double. So I don't think that continuing to increase or to try and increase agricultural production is going to solve the problem. We need to invest immediately in these communities in local production. We need to invest, all of us, in education and investing in the human development. And thirdly, in the private sector, giving people options.
Gaston in Niger, research by the Sahel Working Group suggests that there is actually food available on the markets in these countries. It's just that people can't afford it. The poorest households are spending some 60% of their income on food that they have to buy. So is that the problem?
Yeah, this is part of the problem. We see many people not being able to afford to buy food, because they just don't have the money. If I would give you an example of the pastoralist in Niger who lost all their animals and whose economic basis has been taken away completely, even though the food will be available in the market, people have virtually nothing to sell, to have enough money to buy food. And this is why cash for work activities are encouraged, and it's being done by some organization.
How important is improving farming yields to action against hunger, or are the issues much bigger than that?
Well, yes, the issue is much bigger than that. Food production is obviously an important activity. However, the question and the key question remains, which is the access to food, and especially the access to nutritious food. And I think communities we work with are primarily rural communities who live in very remote areas. And what we find is that access is their key issue. Whether food production is going to enable these access to take place, that's a big question mark.
Can we bring Denise back in there? Because Denise, you're running programs of cash for work and social protection measures. Can you explain a little bit about them and why they're so important?
These activities have been critical this year, and particularly the early intervention component, because we really needed to keep people in their homes, in their villages, particularly women and children. What we didn't want to see was women leaving their villages and either leaving small children behind or, you know, taking them out of school and all of these, you know, movement of women and children towards urban areas or towards neighboring countries. which in a fragile environment like Niger will only aggravate the problem of malnutrition. So whether it's a cash program, which then allows the women to turn around and access, buy the food on a market, or the food transfer program, where markets are not particularly strong, these programs have been incredibly important to protect the populations, protect women and children, protect the few remaining assets that they may have, so that they're not selling off what little they have left.
Gaston, you're similarly looking at some of the underlying problems, aren't you? Because one of the biggest problems in Niger is that soil has been degraded and the water sources are not protected. What kind of work can Tearfund do there?
Yeah, presently Tearfund partners are working hard beside communities and to create awareness, first of all within communities, to make sure that water sources are protected. We get also in touch with government technical agencies to help in that. And as well, government is, especially at local government, communes, and at regional levels, contacts have been made to encourage government to support and especially protect water sources. Because once the water sources are protected and communities are properly educated, they can do small-scale food production, which is very efficient in helping to curb the severity of the hunger in many communities.
Mariana, what we're hearing there is that the importance of work that actually looks at these kind of crises in a much longer time frame to come up with solutions. The aid community has been criticised again for waiting for this emergency and treating it as emergency, albeit responding a little earlier than usual. And the director of UNICEF, Tony Lake, said that the humanitarian community needs to approach this Sahel crisis not just as an emergency, but as all three things that it normally looks at once, looking at emergency and helping with that, looking at how you promote recovery in the region and how you actually look at long-term development. Do you think we've got it right with this one?
Well, I think we are definitely getting right with the concept. I think we understand there's a big shift as far as the dialogue and the at policy making level, and also as far as, you know, the know-how of what agencies need to do. And this shift that we understand is that more and more, at least in our sector, there's an understanding that we need a two-pronged approach. And this is, you know, not only to be able to respond to the crisis when it occurs, but also act in the prevention as well as in recovery phases. The key challenges are obviously about funding and about political commitment to make this happen at national levels. And this is where we need to invest more and more in the next years so that we can indeed tackle the recurring element of the Sahel crisis.
Well, that's all for this month's Guardian Global Development podcast. I'm Felicity Lawrence, and the producer was Celeste Hicks. Many thanks to Mariana Morello Lobo, Denise Brown, and Gaston Swanler. If you want to join the debate, go to guardian.co.uk/global-development. And thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.